Yes, it was. Thanks, Joe, for that very interesting first talk. I was struck when you were describing the efforts by the USDA to reconnect consumers with their food. It was a very interesting transition in one of the more progressive, green-oriented meat export companies in New Zealand, a small one. They were really struggling with their farmer suppliers, getting the kind of right people they wanted to sign on. And they lit upon this idea of inviting six farm families at a time into a kind of a, what we would call a barbecue. You would call it that as well, with the grills out. And they put six different sets of lamb chops out on the barbecue. And it was one from each of the farms, one set from each of the farms. And then they asked the farmers to describe, you know, the taste of each one of the chops and try and work out which one came from their farm. And it absolutely turned a light on these people's heads. And so in a sense, there's also this sort of idea of reconnecting farmers with their food, getting them to actually eat what they do, what they produce. Right, well, thank you very much for the invitation to come here. I'm very, very pleased to be able to come from New Zealand to talk to this session. Very much enjoyed last night's COSA roundtable. Just a show of hands, who was at the roundtable last night? Quite a lot of you, so you'll be patient with the ones who weren't there when I go through the same basic slides about New Zealand. Today I'm talking specifically about the Argos project, and it's a slightly challenging little topic because it's a project that is very multidisciplinary in its orientation, and I'm a social scientist, I'm a rural sociologist, I lead the social research in that project, but it's a project with 27 researchers in it, so I'm trying in some ways to represent results from right across the program. Believe me, the ecologists and real scientists I work with are very nervous about what I say about what they do, so it may be a little bit of an adventure. I'd initially put a slide in about the historical emergence of certified organic, but Joe's done a very good job of introducing that already. I think that at the moment we are, it would be fascinating to think what Howard and Balfour and those types would think of where we are now, because if you gave Joe another 40 minutes or probably maybe some of the other historical papers will touch upon it. The last 30 years of history of organic agriculture have been fascinating in regards to the evolution of certification. And that's the area that I work on primarily, which is the evolution of certification systems, the politics around market-driven certification standards, protocols, audits, call them what you like. And they've created a massively powerful set of dynamics in the organic sector. But they've also created their own dilemmas and problems. So that last question that you fielded about, how does the current USDA standard tie up with the early philosophy is exactly the kind of problem that arises out of certification. And yet also there are massive potentials there because it creates a concrete pathway for people to go down to get into this particular kind of activity. Now, Michael Pollan, who you will all be familiar with, has certainly been giving the commercial organic industry a lot of stick. He's described it as the organic industrial complex, or big organic, and really in quite pejorative terms. And he is arguing that the new certification systems, the whole global scale of organic food trading, which New Zealand has a major vested interest in, and the simple substitution, as Joe was describing, of just putting organic inputs for industrial inputs, really renders the entire concept of commercial organic meaningless, which is, for those many tens of thousands of people around the world who are devoted organic farmers, a little challenging. In rural sociology, we have a particular way of describing. We do the Pollan debate with much longer words, as is the way with social scientists. We call this the conventionalization thesis. This is the idea that organic started out as good and as a true alternative to mainstream agriculture, but has been increasingly subsumed into conventional agriculture during its commercial era. And the conventionalization thesis, in its most extreme form, argues that commercial certified organic is increasingly indistinguishable from conventional agriculture socially, economically, and ecologically. And so therefore we should move on to something like beyond organic or another way of describing sustainable, which is a fairly profound challenge for those of us working in this area. So that is one pathway into the complexity of the Argos project and the way it provides insights into the new phenomena of commercial organic agriculture. So in New Zealand, we've got this experiment set up, which is, to my mind, is a as a social scientist, do we prove Prolin wrong? Can we establish that the conventionalization thesis is correct or incorrect, or maybe overstating the case? Now, bear with me, those who have seen these slides already. This is what I'm talking about. It's a long way from here, and it's a nice geographically variegated country. This is why New Zealand is a unique agricultural society. 62% of our national income comes from primary production. I think that's higher than pretty well any other first world country in the world. Over 90% of the food we produce is exported and has been since about the 1880s, when we became Britain's farm in the South Pacific. 32% of internationally cross-border traded dairy products are traded under the label of Fonterra, our large dairy mega corporate cooperative. And 30% of internationally traded kiwi fruit is traded under the banner of Zespri International Limited, our large corporate cooperative kiwi fruit exporter. The distribution of our four dominant land use types can be seen there. The yellow ones are the pastoral farms, all sitting on the drier, mainly sitting on the drier east coast regions of New Zealand in the rain shadow of the Great Dividing Range that runs up the spine of both islands. You've got dairy sitting there, and usually in the warmer, wetter, more temperate west coast areas of New Zealand down through here. But in here you have the arrival of dairying in North Otago and Canterbury, which is being facilitated primarily through irrigation, which is a major issue. You've got your indigenous forestry still holding on to the high mountainous areas running down through here. Okay, I'm going to do this with my right hand. Down through there, and you've got these major plantings of exotic forestry. What this translates into is a country which has about 52% of our land area in pasture and arable, another certain percentage, but much smaller, in horticulture, planted plantations about 5%, and the remainder of what used to be the 95% of natural forests in New Zealand back down to about 24%, enough for you still to drive through as tourists and enjoy. Our basic agricultural stats, we're still a country dominated by sheep farming, 38 million sheep, some millions of dairy cattle working away only twice a day in New Zealand, it tends to be. There's no three times a day milking in New Zealand. In fact, the trend, if anything, is towards once a day milking. Beef cattle, a small deer industry, a reasonably significant fruit and wine sector with forestry, but grains, you know, arable production, grain production, tiny. We are not grain producers. We're just too wet and temperate. We don't finish grains at all well, except in the few very dry areas of New Zealand, and 4.4 million humans. Right. The thing to remember also about our dominant livestock production systems is that 99.8% of beef production is fully pasteurised, with no grain feeding at all at the end, because we don't have cheap subsidised grain to feed them. There was one beef feedlot that came in experimentally, and it's gone through, I think, three ownership changes as they try to make it economically viable in a country where there is no cheap grain. 100% of sheep production is fully pasture-raised. That's not a big surprise there. But also, I mean, 100% of dairy production is predominantly on pasture, with about 5% of the industry now starting to put supplementary feeding in, usually using rather controversially importing palm kernels from the South Pacific. Again, because we have no cheap supplies of subsidised grain to work with. So this is basically how cows live in New Zealand. It's a reasonably densely stocked system. The stocking rate in New Zealand dairying systems is high, but there they are, they're out there feeding on the grass. All right, the organic sector specifically has been very, very dynamic over the last 10 years, 10, 15 years, starting in the early 90s. And in recent research that we've done, this is even the growth rate between 2007 and 2009. If you can't see it from the back, or you've got eyesight like mine, that about as soon as I had a 4 in front of the age, numeric age of my of myself, I found that my eyes didn't see things from the back of rooms anymore. The red bar is 2007, the green bar is 2009. So even in the last 2 years, there's been quite a significant uptick in the amount of organic, certified organic activity. We've had a major increase in land area, both in pastoral and horticulture, in the last 2 years, and driven by a large organic export market for us. It's about 180 million New Zealand dollars. A New Zealand dollar buys about, at the moment, 76 cents US, so think of us where the Canadian dollar used to be with you guys about 10 years ago. That's where the New Zealand dollar is now. Destination markets for organic, very much driven out of Europe, and increasingly over the last two census periods out of North America. Australia coming on as well. But we also have this other category of green, which is very significant. That's 180 million New Zealand dollars of organic out of a $15 billion export total for New Zealand agricultural products. We have about 5 billion of that, about a third of our industry now, of our agriculture being exported under these other environmental labels. So as a social scientist interested in agriculture, we've been following very closely the uptake of these environmental management schemes. And so in a survey we did a couple of years ago, what we find is that in horticulture, about a quarter of horticultural producers are still not involved in any of these kinds of schemes, which means that three quarters are. And 27%, about around a quarter of them again, are involved in up to three or four such environmental management schemes, often double up on them. And we only were counting schemes that had an overt environmental criteria. These were not just food safety or quality schemes. They had to have a deliberately environmental component to them. Sheep and beef, the pastoral industries, are the other way around. 63% report no involvement, but a quarter are now actually in more than one scheme as well. So you have about a quarter of our sheep and beef farmers who are moving into this area, but it's not quite so widespread. So the Global Gap Alliance is the one that drives much of this. It's driven out of Europe. It's not very visible in the United States, but it's particularly dominant in areas like our apple industry, our kiwi fruit industry. 100% of kiwi fruit and apples is produced under either an environmental management scheme or about 5% of them are certified organic. So those industries greened. Wine's going the same way. Right. Now, Argos. Argos has dominated the lives of a number of people for the last 6 years, more if you take in about the 2 years lead time we spent designing it and bringing particular parties on board to support the project. It's studying sustainability on real farms and orchards. By that I don't mean that it's not a model farm project. It's a project that seeks to look at actual farmers and orchardists out there in sort of middle New Zealand agriculture. So, I mean, there's a particular style of research that's done on research farms and universities and places like that, which is very useful for the kind of knowledge it produces. But we were interested, particularly the sociologists amongst us, is how do the average run-of-the-mill people go when they buy into one of these systems, when they convert into one of these systems. So what we have is we have three panels. Our 107 is divided by three, and you have an organic, a third of them are organic, and they're matched in triplet clusters, geographically contiguous clusters, with a conventional farm next door and an integrated management or one of these EMS-style farms, something that's sort of the other style of green. So you have, all over New Zealand, you have these little triplet clusters of geographically contiguous farms that are, it was a absolute nightmare trying to find all our clusters, but it took about 9 months. But eventually we were satisfied. In the dairy industry, there are no EMS schemes. It's either organic or conventional, so we only have pairs of those ones. It's a very multidisciplinary project. It's looking at social, economic, and ecological dimensions of farm change over time. And where possible, using a BACI experimental design, which is basically the before-after control intervention, which is where the best possible design is actually in the dairy industry, where we started our pairs with both farms conventional, with one registered for conversion, and then followed them through the conversion process in paired form. So you can basically compare them with each other and also with themselves over time. And you'll see with some of the dairy results later that it actually produces some very interesting scientific results. So this is a project. The areas we are, we picked out our sort of dominant sheep beef systems. The kiwi fruit is our most high profile kind of blue ribboned ecological exporter. And we've got high country pastoral with a very unique set of issues up in the very, very extensive low stocking rates up in our high country, and dairying, which is our most intensive industry by a long margin. Although I suspect a number of the irrigated, more intensive dairy farmers stayed well away from allowing themselves to be slipped into our Argos sample. So they're spread throughout throughout New Zealand. Now this is the key point. Argos was not designed to study primarily the philosophical orientation of producers. It certainly is interested in that as a dynamic that's in there. But this was not a study of deeply philosophically committed, experienced, high-performing, you might say, organic producers. It was a study of what happens when someone who is, say, in a conventional system says, I'm going to adopt that market audit system. I'm going to go down that particular pathway there. So the organic growers we are producing, it's a typo on that side, should be certified organic as a commercially constructed set of protocols. So specifically what we are studying as organic here is the commercial protocols for organic certification in New Zealand. So an organic grower for this study is someone who has adopted that market audit system, who has adopted that pathway to market and is doing the organic standards. Now, I think certified organic in New Zealand, from the tone of last night's discussion, has a few bells and whistles attached to it and a few areas of engagement which, say, USDA doesn't. So certified organic in New Zealand is a pretty respectable IFOAM-aligned standards with long historical connections with IFOAM and the international movement. So we're a reasonably strong, considered a reasonably strong standard internationally, particularly in our livestock, where we're considered to be, for the British taste, a little tough. Then that's one panel of them in the clusters of the certified organic. The next is producers who have specifically adopted an integrated management system or a QA based on something like Global Gap. It's different for different industries. So Global Gap defines what is the kiwifruit results in the sheep beef sector. It's a supermarket standard that's being driven by the Waitrose supermarket chain, which is attempting to capture the greenest marketing advantage of the British supermarkets, so they have a reasonably strict green set of protocols. And then you have conventional, which for the purposes of this research is not a particular style of farming, but kind of everyone else. Everyone who is not adhering to a market audit system. So in horticulture, it's that other 25%. In sheep beef, it's the other 63% who haven't signed up to anything and just do what they've done, well, as the case might be, or not, as time goes by. So there are our three panels we're looking at. So after 6 years, we've just finished, on the 1st of October, we finished our sixth anniversary of funding. We have 8 years of funding from the New Zealand government to do this research. And we're hoping, I think with any long-term ecological study, I think the sort of the basic bottom benchmark is 20 years, the ecologists tell me. So plenty of time for me to see out my career studying the Argos farms if we're granted funding for the next 20 years. All right, so really we're at the stage now where we're starting to look. We've just had the first sort of 3 or 4 months of, 20-plus scientists, researchers in a room getting together and saying, how are these results coming together? We've been monitoring like crazy across these farms. We've been looking at, in some dimensions, about 170 measures on each of the properties over time. If you really wanted to get nuanced about the social research we're doing on those farms and all the different questions we ask, it's about 400 to 500 measures of these farms year by year over a six-year period. And so we're now getting together and saying, what's it telling us? We've probably got in our database about 5 to 6 million data points. So I'm not going to go through them one by one. What I'll report today is just really a brief taster. You'll see the reason why. I'm only going to report significant differences, ones that came through with significant statistical power to hold up to what we are anticipating will be the highest level of international scrutiny by referees of our publications. So, economics. Start with the economic, because in many ways it's the simplest. There were no differences in the economic performance, really. We had 13 measures of different ways of measuring economic performance, and 12 found no significant differences. So there is one called effective farm surplus, which I've tried to translate into sociology's, how I understand it. But if there's an economist in the room, they can probably tell me more effectively what the technical terms behind effective farm surplus are. Organic was significantly lower on effective farm surplus. On 12 others, it was not. So the economist basically came up with a nil result. Really, after 6 years. So people converting into the system are not significantly losing money, but they're not significantly making any more, which raised a number of Argos has been fantastic for raising the next couple of questions. Start with the basic science experimental design and start asking the next set of questions. Because there was a huge amount of variability. One of the reasons it was hard to find significance is there's huge variability inside both the organic and the non-organic groups. There's big gaps between the top and bottom performers amongst farms. I wonder whether that's something to do with the New Zealand farming system, the lack of subsidies, the very variable nature of the systems that are being performed under, the very variable geographies that are being farmed on, is that there really was a huge amount of variation. And the top-performing organic ones were very, very successful economically, and so were the top-performing ones in the other groups as well. We are also dealing with a very interesting confounding effect created by the pathway to market. So we notice that those, producers that had a direct pathway into the marketplace, that had a short food chain or didn't have a large mediating organisation between them and the market, did generally tend to make more money out of being organic. And yet it was it's not entirely straightforward. We are really only starting to think our way around this. Because so Fonterra, the giant dairy cooperative, which is fostering the conversion of 300 dairy farms at the moment, they're very involved in our project, and they came along to a lot of our preliminary workshops, noticed our productivity levels and a few of our other production graphs that we were being put up in Argos workshops, and so changed the organic premium halfway through our study. I'm happy to say they changed it upwards. So it is kind of confounding in a sense. It's not a pure experiment. Anyway, bit of a nil-nil draw, I think we'd say, on the if it was a soccer analogy, in the sense that there were a lot of agricultural economists who were saying go organic and you'll lose money because your yields will go out the bottom. There are others who were saying go organic as a commercial organic grower and you'll definitely make a huge profit. And in the New Zealand situation, that doesn't tend to be the case. Although I think, as those of you who heard me talk last night, organic is up against really quite high-performing other sectors. There's no great lump and mass of conventional intensive agriculture out there producing bottom of the market commodities and surviving on subsidies out there for them to compare themselves to. All right, social differences, my bit. So in the conventionalization thesis, some sociologists would argue that commercial organic growers are basically, they adopt the protocols, but in every other respect, they're just conventional growers who are ticking the boxes on the audit scheme, substituting inputs, and other than that, they're basic standard conventional mainstream growers. What we found was this was not the case. Organics is distinctive socially across a whole range of measures and interviews and surveys we've done. Organics is a distinctive panel from conventional and integrated management, or the EMS system. But you have to admit as a sociologist that they share much more than they don't. That there is a large kind of central body to being, a sort of central body of ideas and practice which pertain to being a farmer in New Zealand, which they all share, really quite significantly. Which possibly suggests that the practices haven't diverged that much over time in New Zealand. But there are some key differences, particularly around orientation to the environment, personal orientation to the environment, a thing we call breadth of view, which is a measure that we're playing with sociologically, is an interesting idea. It's this idea of how narrow is your view of your system? What's in that? What's in that system? You know, how many other components? How ecologically broad are you? Do you think about things that are happening off your farm, things that are feeding it? Do you think about wider communities of interest? Do you think about wider global issues of interest? And there is a breadth of view difference between the panels, and also what they, another very sociological useful term, good farming. There are curious differences between organic and some conventional growers. Some of the conventional growers are really quite green, and this is a thing that's become quite an interesting discussion point in the Argos project. They're green, but they're orientated towards different environmental values in their landscapes. So for those of you who were there last night, all those tree planting and restoration, all but one of those photographs came from conventional farms. So it's something that the conventional growers, the people especially second or third generation family farmers, like the idea of planting trees, getting native lands, native trees restored, restoring wetlands, restoring stream sides. That seems to be the way in which a lot of them are channeling their environmental interests, and that is then coming across to the organic group, and the organics in many ways are learning as much off the conventional ones as it is going the other way. Organic was obviously more interested in soils, fertility and microbiological activity. That's where the organic ones are coming from. They've got a huge interest in biodiversity in the soil itself, whereas the conventional ones tended to be more interested in encouraging biodiversity at a landscape level. And we think, of course, you should be doing both. The green convention, so And finally, there was a massive differentiation by ethnicity. There's a significant niche group in New Zealand farming of Maori farmers, and they are very, very different. And I happily give entire conference addresses about the fascinating differences between a Maori approach to commercial farming in New Zealand and the alternative, what we would call a Pākehā approach. Haven't really got time to go into it today, I'm afraid. Okay, into the bit where the scientists start getting excited, which is ecologically. So after 6 years of measures, after millions of data points, what are the differences you're finding between the certified organic and the other systems? First, there are lots of soil differences. There's differences in the bird counts. Birds are extremely important. We have no native mammals in New Zealand apart from a couple of bats. So birds are really where we are at in terms of in sort of an indigenous species. There's differences in the water quality on these properties. Organic is better, but our soil scientists in the Argos project suggest that it's actually, it's a degrees of goodness ratio in terms of soil fertility rather than, you know, organic were good and the conventional ones were clearly corrupted and bad. It was kind of like, on a continuum, the organic was significantly better in a whole range of soil counts. But the soil scientists that we were working with said, actually, the conventional extensive pastureless, actually, their soil's pretty good as well. Terrestrial invertebrates and vertebrates, we found significant differences there between the organic and the other panels. And I think one of the things the farmers really responded to, especially some of the ones we're working with, was in terms of aquatic ecosystems on farms, which is incredibly important for New Zealand. The freshwater thing is a real flashpoint of environmental tension in New Zealand in terms of the impact of farming on freshwater environments. Yeah, it was fabulous on the Argos farms to find that if you took a sample where a water catchment entered the farm, where a stream entered the farm, and where it exited, you could actually find detectable influences of a single farm on that particular waterway. And the farmers really liked that. There was a sense of, and all the catchment level management kind of issues they have to deal with, they kind of lost sight of the fact that their farm makes a difference. And they liked the idea that the right things on their particular farm and put all these filters and plants and all this kind of stuff in, they were going to make the water better, not worse, by the time it left their property. And there were some very interesting energy differences, and this is a really emerging, important area of discussion in New Zealand. Now, I think probably more than just in New Zealand. Right. Now, you're not going to be able to read this. I'm not going to go into all the results, but this is sort of a basic summary table of the results across our three key sectors. Coming down here, total significant differences in terms of the key investigations ecologically. On the sheep, in the sheep beef sector, which is comparing quite extensive pastoral systems, there were 15 out of the 61 measures delivered a significant difference for organic agriculture. In the dairy industry, interestingly, for a more intense sector, only 9 out of 69 differences were significant, but that's partly because of the baccy design in dairying, where you are studying transitional organic producers who are only in their first or second year. So I think the scientists actually felt that, you know, the fact that you were getting significant differences after only sort of 4 or 5 years of them going into the scheme was really quite interesting. And here you have kiwi fruit, which is definitely the most mature of the organic sectors, where you have a lot of commercial organic growers who've been there for 15 plus years in that sector and really tuning up those orchards beautifully. You start and very, very good extension and networking amongst the organic and the other growers in the kiwi. It's very geographically concentrated in one region of New Zealand. There you start to find a really significant set of differences being driven out of there, with 36 out of 54 measures producing significant differences for organic. So here you have, you know, two-thirds of the ecological measures on kiwi fruit orchards that are organic are delivering really quite robust, statistically significant differences for organic. Yeah, and I'm not going to go into each one because obviously for any ecologist sitting out there, you're going to want to know which ones, and you're going to know what direction they were ecologically significant in. And every one, of course, is debatable in terms of are they all heading in the right directions. Right, so here we have, we'll start with a little graph of, say, here's just a simple example of one of those measures in the primary, adding them all together. So not entirely expected. Here you have the organic earthworm numbers on the organic orchards are significantly higher. Organic earthworm numbers on the organic dairy orchards after only a few years really are significantly higher. But an interesting result here, that in actual fact, conventional extensive sheep and beef farmers were significantly higher earthworm numbers than their organic counterparts. And there's a number of hypotheses rolling around the project as to why the reasonably light fertiliser loads that are being put on by extensive sheep and beef farmers compared to the massive nitrate dumping of the dairy sector into their soils is having an effect on earthworm populations. I'll just put up the energy comparisons because I think it's a very, very important area. We don't measure energy per hectare because the difference of intensity of the production systems, the difference of yields, we think confounds that. It's not actually the real question here. The real question is how much energy is produced per unit of food that is produced. So here we have a measure of live weight of lambs or other meats leaving sheep and beef farms under different systems. And, you know, with a P-score of 0.08, there's the organic one with an appreciably more efficient energy profile. In the kiwi fruit, again, with a P-score of 0.01, you know, again, it's appreciably lower per kilogram of kiwi fruit, how much energy is being used, the efficiency of the organic ones. Those were aggregates, because to get statistical power, they took all 6 years of measures and put them together. But in the Backey study, where we've got a lot more statistical power, there's a really fascinating trend line. Okay, it wasn't a significant difference between the two panels. This is the conventional, persistent conventional. This is the conventional registered for organic, which is slightly interesting. And there's slightly more. This comes across in all the measures on the dairy farms, that the group that actually signed up for organic were slightly on that side of the ledger anyway, but not statistically significantly so. But you start to see, as they transition into organics, the gap widening, although this year was a slightly tricky year because there was a major climatic event that, you know what it's like with experimental designs. Right, getting to the conclusions. The categories of organic, integrated and conventional do show differences in the Argos results. They drive a significant amount of difference between the performance of those farms across a whole range of measures. So in that sense, we confounded our null hypothesis that you go organic, it makes no difference. You're just going to be conventional with a fancy marketing label. So you've got to ask the question, does this mean that these are the right categories to talk about sustainability in? Is it useful talking about these market audit systems, or are, as Pollen says, are they just corrupted, debased categories that mean nothing? Well, I think the Argos project is showing they mean something. They do mean something. These market audit categories, people adopting them, either through capture or causation, they are driving differences that you can observe on farms rigorously. Observe on farms. So I think, yes, they are. They are operating as a social scientist. They're out there in the world. They are operating. They are influential. These things make a difference. And no. I think in many ways the market audit categories are also what we can see in the Argos results, is that it's a yes, but, and. They're also obscuring quite significant differences in terms of the ecological performance of our farms. We were set up as a study to experimentally, observe the impact, the effect of these market order systems, but you can't kind of ignore the other ways in which the data is playing out. So, for instance, the conventional green ones. There is massive heterogeneity within the conventional panel. Some of them are dreadful if you are looking for particularly high ecological values, other than, as you saw in terms of the description of landscape modification and habitat restoration, very, very good. Climate change. I don't even want to talk about that result. In terms of attitudes to climate change, we have a small and but significant minority of our organic growers who are massive climate change deniers. The strongest universal acceptance of climate change as a dynamic in agriculture is actually in our two other panels. But you have organic growers who are absolute activists for reacting to climate change. It's to do with scepticism about science in general. And some of them came into organics because they're massive sceptics about mainstream science and just lump all this climate change stuff in with all the other kind of big ag cons that have been played on them over the years. All right, and the cross-industry differences are very, very interesting. There is no doubt, screaming out of the Argos data, is that yes, it makes a difference if you change from being a conventional dairy farmer to being an organic dairy farmer. It makes a much, much, much bigger difference if you're an extensive sheep and beef farmer who converts their farm into dairy production. So the cross-sectoral differences, the way in which particular types and styles of farming happen in particular landscapes, are just undeniable. And of course, the cross-country differences. We don't know, because we've done one single measure internationally using the energy data off the Argos farms and comparing them with some stuff from the UK. It was enormously controversial because You may have heard of the whole food miles thing that came out of our project at New Zealand Lamb. In terms of its total life cycle of energy consumption, was using less energy than the British equivalent coming in from the British Hill Country, which wasn't popular, but made total sense when you recognise that over 40% of the embodied energy consumption on farms is taking place before the food leaves the farm gate. But that's the only one we've done. New Zealand might be out this side of the bell-shaped curve, you know, all three panels, it might be out this side, you know. Until we start broadening our scope out internationally, we just don't know. All right, so to conclude, I think that we have to move into more complexity around categories like organic and conventional. Firstly, if you start thinking of these things in more complex ways, in our results, there's no continuum between organic being the most ecological, integrated being somewhere in the middle, and conventional being in the other. We draw these triangle maps, and they're all over the place. The different systems promote and create different virtues ecologically, economically, and in a whole lot of ways. The continuum really doesn't exist like that. It's much more complex than that. I think we're very interested in looking at the way in which individual orientation interacts with the audit systems to basically flatten the auditing effect. I won't go into that too much. I've written whole papers about that kind of thing. So I think the categories as defined by market audit schemes are capturing difference, but they're by no means providing a total explanation for those differences. So I'm arguing in the, as you would have seen in the abstract for this paper, I'm arguing we need to get beyond a simple organic conventional binary. I think these are complex categories operating out there. They are driving difference. They're driving opportunity. They're also creating boundaries to that opportunity. The market audit categories, the market certification schemes, are creating spaces that drive good things that are happening, but they don't completely and exclusively capture the way in which sustainability is, dynamics are operating across these properties. But I'm certainly rejecting the conventionalization thesis and Pollan's pejorative take on commercial organic. I mean, conventionalisation is not the right way to understand the relations between these categories. Conventional farming for in itself, I mean, one thing is, I think we're demonstrating that even basic mainstream commercialised organic farming is driving important differences on farms. But also, conventional farming is just too crude and heterogeneous a category. There's too much variability within the conventional farming to even know what kind of slur are you making when you say you're becoming conventionalised. I think what he actually means is we're becoming industrialised. And I think that's a very, very different set of questions. And I will basically leave it at that and go to questions. And thank you for all the people who supported the trip over here.